that there are terrorists out there, but we're looking for real solutions, not programs that just make us concerned. We're also concerned for the immigrant communities in our area and among those demographic groups in our area who might be just afraid of the police, who might come from countries where the police are not the good guys. We're concerned about the fear that this random bag search program will instill in them. At the Riders Advisory Council meeting last month, citizens as well as members of the advisory committee expressed skepticism that voluntary random bag searches will do anything to keep us safer. An email that we received before the meeting from Chief Taborn says, quote, "Signs will be posted well in front of the inspection point to alert customers that a random inspection is taking place. This way, if people would prefer not to have their items inspected, they may either return without the item or choose an alternative means of transportation," which struck a lot of us as pretty silly. If a terrorist is carrying a bomb, then they're probably not going to submit to a search, and they'll just go to another metro station. But at the RAC meeting, Chief Taborn said something kind of odd. Twice he implied, in answer to different questions from the Advisory Council members, that there was more to the program than meets the eye. In fact, at one point, when one of the council members asked, couldn't a person just see that a search is going on and drop a bag with whatever contraband in it in a trash can outside the metro station, Chief Taborn said, "We're not stupid," and implied that there will be police outside of the station watching people who decline to have their property searched by police.
Your time has now expired.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, Ms. Sudri, before you go, you said that you were part of a new organization, and you gave a name, but I missed that.
The DC Bill of Rights Coalition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Next speaker is Wendy Gayton, followed by Adam Rokas.
Sorry, is it Gayton or Guyton?
Guyton.
Guyton. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Wendy Gayton. I work at Thread for the City, and I'm to comment on the elimination of paper transfers. Good morning. My name is Wendy Gayton, and I'm the Social Services Supervisor at Thread for the City's Northwest Center. Thank you for allowing me to provide this testimony today. Thread for the City is a private nonprofit agency that provides free food, clothing, legal assistance, medical care, and social services to low-income district residents. Since establishing our free clinic in 1974, our aim has been to alleviate or prevent the pain and suffering experienced by people living in poverty. Today, Bread for the City joins COHO and others in calling attention to the board's decision to eliminate paper transfers. We feel strongly that unless the board modifies its current plans, there will be a detrimental impact upon the district's low-income residents, some of whom are our clients. In addition, we anticipate a direct effect on our agency's limited budget and that this will impede our ability to serve our client population, which includes families with children, persons with disabilities, and seniors. Our specific concerns include the difficulty that many individuals with mental and physical disabilities will have in maintaining their smart chip cards in their possession for any length of time. This will make it necessary for providers to give multiple smart chip cards to the same individuals each time it is lost or stolen. The fact that Metro has made no long-term commitment to provide free smart chip cards after the initial allotment has been given out. The fact that the opportunity for providers to purchase smart trip cards preloaded with a value equal to one bus trip for $1.25 was poorly advertised and limited only to the month of December. And finally, the financial implication that agencies like Bread for the City will experience as we try to provide both smart trip cards and bus tokens to individuals. These are stark economic times, and we recognize the need to cut costs and changes but the changes should not occur at the expense of our most vulnerable residents. In FY08, our agency's social service program conducted over 13,000 client visits, which is a 12% increase over last year's total. As a social worker, I see the struggles of DC residents daily and help work to eliminate the barriers that exist in a variety of arenas. Under the current token and paper transfer system, we are able to eliminate one concrete barrier by simply providing a token to an individual. With that token, he or she can get to and from DHS, a doctor's appointment, a job interview, an AA, a meeting, or to any number of places where they will certainly experience another barrier of some sort. In order to eliminate potential barriers for individuals, we propose the following options. Maintain paper transfers as they are. Maintain paper transfers while Metro works on introduction of disposable fare cards that will act as a token and a transfer as one. The disposable fare card idea, it's my understanding that that idea was initially proposed by Metro and introduced to the provider community, but has since been abandoned. For Metro to commit to providing unlimited free smart trip cards to the provider community and low-income district residents.
Your time has now expired.
Last one is to continue to provide the preloaded cards on an ongoing basis past the month of December. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Are you submitting, or did you submit
yeah,
a written statement? Good, yeah. If that could be, is you have one copy? You'll...
I got more.
Okay, good. We'll want to see that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Adam Rokap, followed by Leroy Morgan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Adam Rokap. I'm the Director of Social Services at Miriam's Kitchen, and I'm also going to be talking on the topic of the elimination of public transfers, and I'll be echoing a lot of what Ms. Guyton just shared. The social services network in D.C. is fragmented, and public transportation, particularly buses, is really the thread that keeps everything together and keeps everything from unraveling. And the region relies on nonprofits and other organizations to be providing transportation assistance in kind so that vulnerable individuals can be meeting with employment counselors, getting to a clinic to get their antipsychotic medication, getting to health appointments, and much, much more. We understand the need for eliminating paper transfers and look forward to the point when the system is more efficient and doesn't need to use them. But until then, we need to find a way to accommodate the most vulnerable individuals. So we work with homeless individuals in DC at Miriam's Kitchen. And we feel that requiring individuals to use smart trip cards will cut many people off from the transportation system, including many disabled individuals. So people who are homeless, it's a regular fact of life that you're in the shelter and your bag gets stolen, or you have a mental illness and your life is so chaotic that you can't hold on to your belongings. So expecting someone to hold on to the smart trip card permanently is not realistic. It'll work for many of my clients, but not for everyone. The most elegant solution would be to have a disposable one-way smart trip disposable one-way fare card similar to what they have on the Metro trains. But until we can get to that point, I think that the best solution would be to continuing to provide a way for nonprofits to have access to the smart trip cards to give them out to people who lose them or when they're stolen. So I think the first step of providing the free smart trip cards to nonprofits in December is a good one, but so far, as of yet, there's not a plan for that to continue. So I'm happy to ask any to answer any questions or be available at another time. We hope to be able to work together to make sure that the most vulnerable individuals are served.
Questions for Mr. Roca? Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much for your statement today. You're with Miriam's Kitchen, is
yes.
that right? Has your organization received any of the free smart trip cards to date?
I put in an order this week we tried to use half of our annual budget for tokens to get as many as we could, but and so I should be picking them up next week.
No, this is the free. Have you accessed any? Metro WMATA is distributing 50,000 free smart trip cards, and the District of Columbia's share of that is 18,000. Has your organization received any of those to date?
So it's been kind of confusing. This has sort of been the problem all along. We're not sure exactly what's happening. They have a way for us to buy, a smart trip card that has $1.25 on it, and we only pay $1.25 for it. So they're in fact giving it to us for free. So I don't know if that's part of the 50,000.
I tell you what,
elsewhere.
Would you do us a favor,
mm-hmm.
and you know how to reach me, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Would you check with your organization, and I would put the same question to the prior speaker, who I meant to ask, but I didn't get a chance. If you can give us an idea of just what your experience has been, if you can email me or call me, whatever is easiest, and let us know so that we can see the monitoring of this at your organizational level. Would you be willing
Certainly.
To do?
Yeah, we'd be
Great,
happy.
That would be very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And a speaker?
Last speaker is Leroy Morgan.
Good morning, Mr. Morgan.
Good morning, Bull Mills. My name is Leroy Morgan. I'm on family. I'm here to give my feedback about the service. Brought to my attention, I was riding Metro. I ride Metro all the time. DC, how's that? Okay? Yes. On Thanksgiving Day, I noticed that the Metro Rail was operating on full car train. It was a pleasure to see that instead of six car train. That's a money saving idea. So I used to feel great. I give an A for that. That was good service there. I've seen the full car trains. That was the six car train. On Friday after Thanksgiving, I noticed that the rush hour during the whole day, there was no eight car train. That was a good idea to not have an eight car train on that day. And also, I'm going to get a recommendation about upcoming holidays, Christmas Eve. I would recommend to the Metro not to operate rush hour service after noontime because of dropping ridership. And on Christmas Day, I would recommend that if you're going to have rail cars, I recommend have four rail cars instead of six rail cars to be more efficient and budget-saving idea. Friday after Christmas, President Bush granted the federal employees day off. I would recommend that you cut down the service because there's a drop in the ridership because the federal government is off, and also not the postal service, but some of the federal government. And also the customer that goes to the office building for service or business. I would recommend Friday after Christmas to cut back on your service due to a drop in ridership. And also, too, I noticed in the Washington Post that on Veterans Day, I wasn't here, but the Metro bus was operating on the weekday schedule. I have to give an F for that because on a weekday, on Veterans Day, the federal government's off, and D.C. only, the D.C. government's off. Why you operate on weekday service on a Veterans holiday, I can't understand that. That's a waste of money right there, especially in a rush hour service. And that's all I have for me. Any questions?
We'll try to get some answers after public comments concluded.
Should I stay or?
No, that's you can take your seat, and we'll ask the general manager to address those questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, that's the final speaker. All right, let's go up top. The first speaker raised the matter involving Metro's ongoing negotiations with Google. Mr. Cato, can you tell us where we stand with that?
Yes, we still have ongoing negotiations. There's several issues to work out. There are legal issues, financial issues, and some technical issues, and we're still working with Google on those issues.
The speaker referred to several things. In particular, he described, I guess, and I think in part this must have to do with the response he felt he got, but he referred to Metro as stonewalling, which I'm not sure, you know, that can mean a lot of different things. But I'm sure you'd agree, Mr. Cato, that we want to operate as much as possible in an open manner.
Yes, he did mention that, and we do operate in an open manner.
Can you say a little bit about the nature of the issues that have to be dealt with in order for us to satisfactorily conclude a contract of some kind or legal agreement with the Google Corporation?
Yes, Mr. Monomay is going to mention some of the specifics.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to speak to those issues. One of the things that we're very, very interested in doing whenever we partner with any partners such as Google on providing transit information is ensuring that the quality of that information is good. That's something as an organization we want to make sure that our brand is kept well. And so we want to make sure that whatever we do in moving forward, we adhere to that value. We also recognize that that it's our responsibility, frankly, to make sure that our information about our service is made available. So we're going to work with whether or not it's specifically Google or any other provider of transportation or transit information, that we make sure it's made available so Our path forward is to make sure that the quality is there, to make sure that it's done in a way that protects our business interests, and as the general manager mentioned, our financial interests.
Let me make sure I understand. So, in other words, Mr. Monomy, is the kind of thing you're concerned about, if we have information, people are using some service to get information, which they believe, you know, comes from the transit agency and is reliable, that if there's some problem with that, then they encounter difficulties on an individual basis, which they then attribute to us, and on a larger basis, if the information is problematic, then we could have large numbers of people trying to do the wrong thing, go the wrong place, or not wind up paying the fare they think they're going to pay. I mean, is these the kind of things we're talking about?
Absolutely. Any information that is related to riding our system, we believe, impacts our brand. So we make sure that it's accurate, it gets people where they need to get to in the most efficient manner, provides them with accurate information about the costs and price of our services. So that's essentially the bar, the standard that we want to make sure we achieve.
I'm told there are also legal technical issues. We, of course, operate as a compact, and
that's right.
For us to enter into agreements, there are often legal details, and I gather there's some of that involved as well.
Not at liberty to talk in too much detail about those, but that's correct.
Okay, and let me ask you, is it your view that it is potentially a very valuable thing for this agency to be able to conclude some kind of deal with Google?
I'll be even broader about that. It's not necessarily that it's about working with Google. That's one of the many partners that we think we could work with. The ability of making our information available for whomever out there that does manipulation of information to create applications, for example, for people's PDAs, having a relationship with them would be good, not just for us, but for our ridership and for the region in general. So it's a direction we want to move in.
So your goal is to be able to get information as broadly available as possible through whatever devices
Absolutely.
People use.
Whether we do it ourselves, of our own volition in our website, or with a partner that can provide that service.
Can the board expect a report back sometime soon about how that's progressing and perhaps
Absolutely.
Possible action?
Absolutely.
Good, thank you. Other questions? Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I just want to say that, I think the point that he makes about the openness of the process here at Metro WMATA is something that we all need to remember and be conscious of. And I think this agency works hard at being transparent. We have made a great many changes in that regard since I've been a member of this board. But I think he is talking about Google, and he's talking about more than Google. He's talking about a certain level of frustration which he and those who support his point of view have experienced. And I think we should take that to heart. And because we're all here interested in being as open and as communicative as possible. And I know that to be the case. And so this is something that I think that we should keep in mind as a result of Mr. Alpert's testimony and as a result of all of our willingness to be just that. Thank you.
Mr. Graham, I would certainly agree with your general point that we have been making extra efforts in recent years in particular to make both the agency in general and the board particularly more open, and I would say that in response to some of the specific matters that Mr. Alpert raised, there are a number of avenues that are open, one that, of course, he availed himself of today. There's also the Riders' Council, which is a useful way for riders to bring issues forward to the board, and which we receive a report on at every meeting, and which is a good opportunity to discuss a lot of the issues about improved service, and I would suggest that as something that he and others might be interested. I'd also say that although, you know, Mr. Alpert was talking about members didn't like getting emails directly, I think the concern for some of us is that, you know, it's the nature of this technology. It's a dangerous thing. You know, somebody wants to crank something out and send 500 emails in a day, they can do that. It makes it hard to read very many emails. And for a lot of us who, you know, serve the public in a number of ways, that's a means by which I am trying personally to be open to my constituents. And they send me messages about problems they have on everything from metro issues to, you know, potholes on their streets to difficulties with service agencies, with anything that they need help on, and I try to be responsive to that. So, you know, when one person with one particular concern is able to put several hundred messages in the box, that obviously delays the ability to help anybody else. And so, you know, I would hope that folks who have a concern would try other methods first, such as call to a board member. And I don't know if Mr. Alpert tried that. I will say no one has directly approached me about this issue, and I'd be happy, would have been happy, and still will be happy to talk to anybody who'd like to meet with me about this or any other concern. And so, you know, you can avail yourself of some of those opportunities first, too, and I would suggest that that might be more useful. You may have more access to the board than you realize. A lot of us, if not all of us, I think, are generally pretty accessible, and you should feel free to talk to certainly those who represent your jurisdiction, and I'm open to people from anywhere and respond to folks from around the region as they may call upon me. Okay, I look forward to hearing more about this as we proceed. The second speaker, Ms. Udry, talked about an important issue regarding this bag search question. I think it is something we're going to have continuing conversations about, and I just want to say that I want to thank Ms. Udry for reminding us of kind of the other side of the issue, that there are important issues of basic U.S. constitutional rights that are raised, at least, by this matter, and that we have to be mindful of. So I thank her for speaking to us today. We had a couple of speakers on the issue of paper transfers, which is hard upon us with the transition that is scheduled for January 4th. And Mr. Cato, I have a few questions about that. Let me start, in no particular order, but let me start with a question about the distribution of free SmartTrip cards that the board directed, I think, a year ago. And I've heard different things about what's happened with those. I've heard in some cases, some jurisdictions ostensibly, supposedly have not distributed them all. My own, I understand, they're all out. What do you know about what the status of those are?
Okay, there's two different events that are occurring. One is the 50,000 cards that were given out earlier this year. The latest information that I have is that more than 20,000 are yet to be distributed. And I was going to mention that in my remarks. In addition, I was asking for board approval to have the authority to distribute additional cards if necessary when those run out. Second to that, which one of the speakers did bring up, we're currently selling SmartTrip cards only to the social service providers that are preloaded with the $1.25 fare for the $1.25 for no cost for the card whatsoever to help through the transition. Instead of picking up tokens this month, they get a card with $1.25 value for the same price as a token.
Just as if they were buying right
now. And as we are able to utilize the disposable SmartTrip cards, and that is something we're still investigating, that will be the answer, the solution, overall solution.
Okay, but it's been under investigation for a while, so can you tell us a little more about where we stand on obtaining such a card?
Well, the latest input I have had, and this is 2 weeks old, is hopefully we will be able to have the disposable cards in the latter part of 2009. I've asked to determine if that could be much sooner than that, but that's the latest, and I can do the research on that and get back specifically and answer you.
But they are coming, is what you're saying?
Yes, from my understanding, they are coming.
And jurisdictions that are interested in obtaining additional, I mean, what is the view of providing additional
I recommend that the board authorize me to distribute additional cards.
Okay, and is that request going to come to us at some point?
Yes, and I believe I might have the authority to do that.
You need to let us know. So
okay.
We can authorize it if we need to.
Legal counsel is working on another issue as soon as he's done it.
Sure. Later in the agenda, perhaps we can return to that. Other questions? Mr. Graham.
Yeah, can we get the latest numbers on the actual distribution of these cards in the District of Columbia, I presume in the other jurisdictions, but I would ask for them.
Yes.
The actual cards, the number of cards which have moved from this authority and are today in the hands of low-income persons.
The information that we have for the District of Columbia, we provided 19,150 as of December 15th. 12,870 have been distributed, which leaves a balance of six.
No, distributed to the agencies. But I want to know, I would like us to bore down just a little bit further on this and get confirmation as to how many cards are actually in the hands of the persons who we are intending to benefit by this.
It's my understanding it's 12,870.
And you're saying that those are actually in the hands of the ultimate recipient, or those are in the hands of...
They have been distributed by the social service agency.
To, okay. To other agencies.
I'm not quite sure who they...
In other words, there's a two-step process. Metro's getting them out to agencies. Right. Agencies are giving them out to human beings.
Yes.
Mr. Graham is interested in knowing how many human beings are actually holding the cards now.
To be clear, all 50,000 Smart Chip cards were distributed almost a year ago.
Say again, I'm sorry.
Almost, to be clear, almost a year ago, all 50,000 cards were distributed. They were distributed from Metro staff to one representative of each of the jurisdictions, one central place, with the understanding, well, with the direction that they establish their own criteria for distributing among their own clients within their own jurisdictions.
Right, but that's not the question.
And so from that, if you look at the last page of the general manager's comments today, you'll see a chart that shows in the first the third column there that shows the distribution to all the agencies. The second column
wait a second. Let me just get to where you are.
The general manager had anticipated telling us about this in his comments that are later in the agenda. Since people were here asking the question now, it seems like we could get to that now while they're here. So if we look ahead to that item.
I have the page.
And there's a table there. And that's what you're asking us to look at.
Yes, exactly. So there's a table there at the last page. What that shows is first the jurisdiction in the first column. The second column says the contact within each of the jurisdictions. The third column shows the number of Smart Chip cards that were provided by us to that contact within the jurisdiction. The fourth column shows the report, shows the number of cards that were distributed by the jurisdiction to actual people. And I think that's the question that you were asking there.
I don't want to go on and on and on about this, but I would like you to inquire of Boladale Waraloa, who is our D.C. representative. I'd like you to inquire of her or him, I don't know whether it's a male or female, as to how many cards of this 12,870 have actually been placed in the hands of a low-income person, not in the hands of a nonprofit agency, for subsequent distribution to a low-income person.
And we've asked that question, and they are unable to give us that information.
Right. Well, then
we'll ask it again.
Excuse me, Mr. Zimmerman. May I pursue my line of questions? That is my concern, and you know, I just want to know. We've got so much indication of people who are really, really worried about this program. And I just want to ascertain with certainty that what we have done so far is working. And then we can talk about doing more. But the responsibility for all of this, I believe, lies with this authority, not with the, and this is my view for the District of Columbia. Others can speak to their jurisdictions. But for the District of Columbia, I see the responsibility with the authority, and I just want an accurate report as to how well this is working. The fact that we have been distributing these cards for many months now, and we still have fully one-third of the cards in the hands of this D.C. agency, which have been given to them without distribution, is an obvious question. But, Mr. General Manager, can we bore down into this and get me this information?
Yes, we will get whatever information we can get. We'll bring it back to the board.
Okay, and you can, let's not wait till the next meeting. Can you communicate this to me directly? Thank you.
We can.
I think the second order question that Mr. Graham is asking is very important, but I'm not confident about the responses on the first order question. Because, for instance, it says here for my county, contact not available to provide an update, and it indicates, in the case, most of them are distributed, I guess. I know I have been told that they were all distributed. Now, I'm not sure what it means what update there would be if there were only 72 cards out of 3,450, you know, left to be distributed. But in any case, the information I had received a week or so ago was that they're all out, and they have been, and they're actually asking, can we get more? And my guess is if they were communicating that to me, they probably were communicating it to Metro too.
Well, this sort of illustrates our issue with communication between the social service agencies and ourselves. So what that means is that when we tried to contact that person on multiple occasions to confirm that, we had heard that from Arlington. That's why we put the caveat in there. We heard that from, obviously, from you, that, but we weren't unable to confirm that it was the case.
Well, the next time, if you have a problem, why don't you let your board member from Arlington know that? And if there actually is a problem on their getting an answer, I can help you do that. I would bet money, were I a betting person, that I'm going to hear a different story at the other end about the difficulties somebody's had communicating with here. I'm just saying.
Well, you sort of went to my point. I would wish that we would communicate with the jurisdictional representative, because I really don't want to put all of the onus on Metro when the social service agency's responsibility. So I think what we'd like to know is, are they meeting the responsibility that we expect as a jurisdiction and ensuring that that is conveyed to Metro? My communication is that there are still cards to be distributed. And I've had the communication as to the urgency of getting these cards out. I'm not sure that's come back to you. So I think we need to close the loop and that you communicate with the jurisdictional representatives the information, because I really do believe that there is some onus on the jurisdictions as well as on Metro.
Thank you. Mr. Lynn. Anything further? Mr. Kidder, I would note that Ms. Guyton gave us a specific, you know, written statement that has some specific recommendations, and I'd ask you to take a look at that and be prepared for, you know, to respond point by point
yes,
on each of those recommendations.
Mr.
Graham.
Yeah, I think part of the breakdown here, you know, and I'm only speaking for my own jurisdiction, is that these agencies, you know, there's no real sense of obligation associated with this. I mean, we use them to distribute these cards. They should certainly respond to this distribution. I want to help assure that they are distributed. I'm sure Deputy Mayor Albert feels the same way. You know, we want to pitch in, but there's a little bit of passing the buck here, which I'm a little bit uncomfortable with, because, you know, and I'm here as a member of this board, as well as a member of the Council of the District of Columbia, and I can work on both sides of this, on either side of this, but one way or another, what really matters here is we need to be assured that these cards are getting to the intended beneficiaries. And, you know, and I want to work this side of it, but I will work the other side as well. But that's the key. And I just, right now, you heard my question earlier to two service providers in the District of Columbia. You know, and it didn't appear to me that there were that either of them are really well aware of the fact of how many cards their agencies have received and what they've done with them. So I think it, with all the concern about this, I think we have a very special responsibility. Thank you.
All right. The final speaker raised questions of level of service and when you run 6-car trains or 4-car trains or 8-car trains. Mr. Cato, I think it's fair to say that matching the supply to the demand is a key part of the challenge and one of the things that you've been focusing on along with Mr. Francis.
Absolutely, and we will continue to do that because it provides us the opportunities to save money, particularly in these very tough times.
And specifically the decision, for instance, on Veterans Day, I believe was related to experience of what the demand actually was the year before and
yes,
the fact that although it's a federal holiday, large numbers of people in fact work.
Absolutely, and we update that information and we make adjustments based upon the latest ridership.
We do know not that long ago we had an economy measure, I think right after you came here maybe, where we went for a while the four-car trains at some hours and got hit thoroughly over the head on that one.
Well, actually, we found that the ridership was, demand was greater, and we switched back to the six-car trains.
Very good. Mr. Lynn.
But isn't it true that our riders are also using other trips more than just work trips? Work trips is not a measurement of demand on our system. And in fact, we're actually finding that there are more and more people that are using discretionary trips that are using our system throughout the day. So there's not a one-to-one relationship between the federal government being closed and the lack of demand on our system.
Very good point.
Right.
Mr. Kidd.
That's an excellent point. In fact, when we reduce the number of cars in the train, we reserve additional cars in case our estimates were wrong. If we find that the demand midday was greater than what we anticipated because it was a holiday, we immediately change the mix of trains. When that train returns to the station, to the end of the line, we add additional cars to them.
Thank you. All right. We had a couple of changes to the agenda that I want to note. One item removed on 6B from what you saw earlier that we're not ready for. We have an addition requested by Prince George's or Maryland on the behalf of Prince George's for which is shows is shown as item 1112. Mr. Graham, was there another change to the agenda?
Yeah, but I can do that in my report.
Okay, very good.
What is item 1112?
It's an administrative item regarding the bus tariff that involves the Prince George's bus service, and we will hear about it. That's right. With those amendments, I offer the agenda as revised. If there are no objections, we'll accept the agenda so revised. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved.
Well, we are not approving items within the various.
No, just the agenda. Just the agenda. Just agreeing to what we're going to talk about.
Right.
In the order we're going to talk about them. So we have the minutes then as the next item, the minutes of the November 20th meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to those minutes to be offered? And there's a blue sheet that I believe reflects revisions that have been made. Is there a motion on the minutes?
So moved.
Mr. Benjamin moves to approve the minutes as presented. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Albert. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. The minutes are approved. For the Riders' Council, is Ms. Iacomini here this morning? Good morning.
Good morning.
For two more minutes.
Yeah, I was just going to say almost good afternoon. It is, once again, my pleasure to present the Rider Advisory Council's monthly report to you all, and you do have my written remarks, so I'll just hit the highlights. As you have heard from one of the public speakers, the focus of our December meeting was a discussion about the random bag inspection policy. We had representatives from Metro's Transit Police Department, including Chief Taborn and Deputy Chief Olson, and they gave us an overview of Metro's random bag inspection policy, which was adopted by the general manager in October. Eight members of the public had come to speak in our public comment period, and they happened to speak on the same topic. All of the speakers were in opposition to the policy. Following the presentation, the chief and other transit police officers present engaged in a very good and open question and answer period with the council. Our members, though, brought up several concerns with the program. Due to the high volume of passengers at many Metro Rail stations, there was a concern about backlogs of riders having their bags inspected. Officers thought that wouldn't happen, but we couldn't quite see how in rush hour, if you're doing every 14th or every 20th person, how all of a sudden a queue wouldn't develop. And it was unclear to us how that would ever be handled. More importantly, we were concerned about such a delay in relation to searches of Metro bus passengers at bus stops, because buses generally arrive and depart with much less frequency than trains. The chief very clearly said to us that, quote, they will not have a passenger miss his or her bus, close quote. And we all hope that that, should the program be implemented, be the case. Some members wondered if the process could cause less problem if appropriately trained dogs were just used exclusively instead of standing by. It was suggested that police officers provide individuals who are searched with a note indicating their participation in the search program, which could serve as a record to an employer that somebody is late because they happen to have been chosen. We understand that this is done in New York, where they already do have such a random search program. Members share concerns about negative effects of the searches on immigrants and members of minority communities, many of whom come from places with different dynamic between police and citizens. We also want to make sure, and we've been told that the police are trained in customer relations, because this is a no exceptions policy. So you could have an instance where a child or an infant in a stroller is going to be searched, and that could raise real public relations issues with the parents. We also need to hope that they're mindful of needs of passengers with disabilities. We also want them to take advantage of retaining more officers with different language skills. I know that's been a concern of the board itself. So clearly this program would highlight the need for that. There was a consensus that Metro should provide more information to members of the public about how the program would be conducted, when and if implemented. For instance, the website might have a little demonstration film on as to what people are to expect so that perhaps it won't quite be so frightening, and to note that any illegal contraband that is found in such a search would subject whomever is searched to some kind of action, and that people should become familiar with what they're allowed to carry on Metro and what they're not. There's many times we're having an office party and I bring in the knife to cut the cake. That might not go over so well in one of these searches. So I think we all need to be a little careful about that. Following the question and answer period, the council approved a resolution calling on the Metro Board and the General Manager to convene at least one public meeting at a time and place convenient to the public, at which Metro Administration could present information on the inspections policy and give the public sufficient opportunity to make comments and questions about the policy. The resolution expressed the hope that at least one such meeting would be held before the General Manager actually implemented the program. The motion was approved by a vote of 13-2. Through this motion, the Council wanted to acknowledge the sincere, passionate, albeit opposite points of view that had emerged since this program was announced by the General Manager. I think our motion reflects the dynamic tension between freedom and safety that marks democracy in the United States. It's a very fine balance, and particularly in this city, and with inauguration coming, it's a fine line we all walk. Deputy General Manager Gerald Francis and Christian Kent also came to our meeting to talk about the customer delivery standards. We actually hadn't gotten a draft yet by email, and I'm hoping that we do that so that RAF can start commenting on the measures and also trying to start making what might be some of the performance measures that go along with the standards. We are very excited about this. We just haven't seen it yet. And sadly, due to the length of time the council spent on the random bag search, the council was not able to hear a planned presentation on WMATA's new website, and we deeply regret that. However, it was December 3rd. The site was going to go live December 8th. We figured, hey, we'll get to see it in real time. Why don't we just do that? So I apologize to Suzanne Peck and her folks, but we will be looking at the website. And finally, inauguration planning. And for this, I think I really need to get my scold cap on. So I'm sort of going to use my alternate persona, if I can, just to speak about this for a minute. You know, as the authority has done a great job, and I think they're continuing to plan, but what is unique about this inauguration is there's going to be tons of things that Metro can't control, like the Secret Service and what they close and what they do. So Metro needs to be very, very prepared to make sure everything is in order in their own house, like making sure all the elevators and escalators work, making sure that there are the barriers that are around those things are gone, making sure announcements are clear. I think it's fine if you all want to raise the fares that day and do parking, but let's make sure the website is very reflective of how much people should be purchasing on the internet. We don't want that to go awry. People should touch the system as little as possible that day. That means not have to use the ad fare machines. That means not have to buy cards that day. That means not to have trouble at the gates. So, I was also completely weirded out by the fact that Metro might not run escalators in the up position. I mean, heck, imagine walking up some of these escalators. There are going to be people who don't know how steep they are. They're going to be in winter coats. They could very well have a cardiac asthma attack, and that's all we don't need that day. So I think while stationary going down is fine, stationary going up is a bad idea. Okay, now that that's over, I'd like to take a moment of personal privilege and thank everyone for all the cooperation that I, as chairman, have gotten this past year, from the board, from the staff, from members of my council, from the press, from the public. It's been a great privilege to serve. And I think that RAC, along with Metro staff and the board, has gotten a lot of things done this year. There's a lot of things we need to keep our eyes on, like the paperless transfer issue, improvements to Smart Trip, and customer communications. And I'm hoping that since I don't have so many administrative functions, I'll be able to work a little bit more on some of those topics. Thank you all very much again for the privilege to serve.
Thank you, Ms. Your report, you did reference a resolution, and we don't actually have a copy of that resolution, so I'll ask your staff to get that to the board. Thank you very much for that very good and thorough report. Mr. Linton.
Let me also thank you for your service. I think when we started with the Citizen Advisory Board, there were always questions about whether or not the contributions from that board would be one in which there would be confrontational and, you know, what kind of issues are emerging and how will the citizens really take advantage of the opportunity to be a partner in making sure that this system is, in fact, the best that it can be. And I think clearly you're the kind of person that we had envisioned when we were looking for the best of this advisory board. Clearly, we need and can benefit from good, critical contributions, but it's also the way it's done, how it's done, how it's presented, and choices and options that are provided that says that there's a real concern of those who are serving to make sure that we all get better, and I thank you for that.
All right. We next have a chairman's report, which I'm going to forego in view of the number of things we have on our agenda. And I will go to the general manager for his report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I don't have the same makeup as Nancy did, but next time I try to talk to her in advance and to do that. First, I'd like to wish everyone a happy holiday season. This is our last board meeting of 2008. And I'm pleased to announce that we have completed our first annual report, the 2008 annual report, which I believe members of the board should have in your packet. This report will also be made available on the internet. I want to thank the board members, the Metro staff, members of the Writers Advisory Committee, and Elderly and Disabled Committee, and most of all, our customers for their support over the past year. This is a time to think about and be thankful for those things that matters most to us. In that spirit, I hope that everyone is able to share this joyous season with family and friends. However, I must point out that Metro does not take the holiday season off. We will still be here to take people, whether they need to go to work, to shop for gifts, to visit loved ones, or to perform other activities. We're open 365 days of the year, and you can be sure that during the coming weeks, we will be working hard on two very big events taking place in January. The first, of course, is the elimination of paper transfers, which was discussed in the public comments, and also the beginning of balance transfers between bus and rail, which begins on January 4th. Obviously, this is on the minds of many people, as indicated this morning, and some are concerned. First, let me lay out some of the pros and some of the issues concerning the elimination of paper transfers. The elimination, of course, will reduce the boarding time on buses because it will encourage the use of Smart Trip cards. Once people get used to loading monies on their Smart Trip cards, there will be fewer delays at the fare box. The process is easy. All you need to do is press a button, tap your Smart Trip card, feed the fare box with the dollars or coins, tap your Smart Trip card two times, and you're done. And in addition, remember that our operators are there to help. And we have made instructional materials available in many languages, including English, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, French, Vietnamese, and Amharic. I believe that's how you pronounce that. Using the Smart Trip card yields great benefits.
First, there is a 10-cent discount on regular bus fares when you use the card. Plus, you will be able to take advantage of a 3-hour transfer period, which is a 1-hour increase from the existing transfer period. During that period, your bus-to-bus transfers are free, and you get a discount, a 50-cent discount, either way, if you're transferring between bus and rail. Later this month, we will more than triple the number of locations to buy a SmartTrip card. CVS Pharmacy will begin selling SmartTrip cards on Tuesday, December 23rd, at 190 stores in the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. Finally, we estimate that this policy will help us collect an estimated $5 million more each year in revenue because it will curb the abuse of transfers. Of course, that brings me to the many issues in regards to the elimination of transfers or paper transfers. We've been questioned as to whether the economic impact of this policy will be on, what will the economic impact be on customers in our region who earns the least. The best answer to that came from board member Peter Benjamin. The impact is $5, and that impact is very short-lived. I stress again that SmartTrip customers get a return on their investment every time they pay a bus fare or transfer. Even so, there are some who still may need some help. Last January, we provided 50,000 SmartTrip cards to the social service agencies of local governments who fund Metro. More than 20,000 of these cards, based upon the last estimates, are yet to be distributed. And we on, and I recommend that that the board give me approval, and that just takes a motion by the board and a vote to provide an additional 50,000 Metro Trip cards if needed to those social service agencies when they run out of the original 50,000. We're also aware that this policy will affect social service agencies not run by the government. And we've looked at many different options. And given the rules that we are guided by in the compact, we're currently selling SmartTrip cards with one preloaded $1.25 fare to those agencies for the $1.25, thereby giving them the SmartTrip card for free. The bus tokens preferred by these agencies will still be sold, and they can be loaded into a SmartTrip card at the fare box. This allows those agencies to distribute the tokens where appropriate or to use the SmartTrip cards when one of their clients requires a transfer. Does this mean that they have to make changes to the way they operate and try to get the SmartTrip card returned after their use? Yes, it does. But this is the only current practical solution that we have been able to come up with. Over the next year, we will be working with those agencies and our suppliers to obtain disposable SmartTrip cards that we believe will be the solution to the overall issue. In addition, we have provided training to those agencies in the use of SmartTrip cards to help them make the transition. Now, the weekly pass may make sense for some individuals other than the SmartTrip card. This pass is still available, and it offers unlimited travel on regular Metro bus routes for $11. It is also discounted to $6 for seniors and those with disabilities. All in all, the coming changes offer opportunities for Metro riders to save money, and they benefit taxpayers whether they use Metro or not. There are no two ways about it. Eliminating paper transfers makes sense for Metro, and it does create some issues for social service agencies, which we're working with them to resolve. Initiating a balance transfer is a long-awaited bonus, and that is why using a SmartTrip card makes sense for Metro customers. The other issue of the second event that is occurring in early 2008, of course, is the inauguration of the 44th President of the United States. We at Metro are thoroughly engaged in planning for this historic event, and we will deliver the best service possible. We see this as an opportunity to set an example for transit in the United States and around the world. Having said that, I must remind our customers and these who plan to use Metro that during the inauguration weekend that the laws of physics do apply. One of these laws is that no two objects can occupy the same space at the same time. This applies to Metro customers as well. We have only so many trains and buses, and there will be waits, and there will be crowds, and no bicycles will be allowed on the rail system on inaugural day. We will work very hard to minimize the waits and the crowds, but we cannot eliminate them. People can expect crowded trains, crowded platforms, and mezzanines and sidewalks. But let me give you some of the highlights so far. On inauguration day, Metrorail will operate rush hour services for 17 consecutive hours from 4 a.m. to 9 p.m. and will stay open for 2 extra hours until 2 a.m. The U.S. Secret Service has deemed that the inauguration is a special national security event, and due to security measures, the ICI's Navy Memorial Penn Quarter Metro Station on Metro's green and yellow lines will be closed until after the parade on inaugural day. Also, for security reasons, all Metro restrooms will be closed. However, we will provide over 150 porta potties for our customers. Metro has also designed commemorative fare cards, one-day passes, and smart trip cards that riders will be able to purchase and use in the days leading up, during, and after the inauguration. The paper fare cards are expected to be in vending machines before the end of this year. The commemorative smart trip cards with no value will be available for $10 in early January. We will also sell those cards with an additional $10 in value for $20. We will let the public know when they are available, and that should be in the next few days. The commemorative fare media has a very practical purpose, and that it can reduce the lines at fare machines and help people get into the Metro Rail system faster. For those customers who opt for the one-day pass, they can be purchased through the Internet for $10. That's because we are extending the hours for those pass on inaugural day. We will also be selling the one-day pass by hand on inaugural day for $10. And if you can, buy your one-day pass earlier before the 16th, avoid the crowds, and also at a lower cost, at the regular cost. As I mentioned, on inauguration day, we will be providing rush hour services on the rail system from 4 a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. In addition, the Metro bus system will be providing additional services throughout the region. We're working with all three jurisdictions in Maryland, the District of Columbia, and Virginia to provide express services coming into the city. As of today, I do not have the specifics on those routes because we're still working with the District of Columbia and the rest of the region to determine which streets will be open and which streets and what areas can we drop off our passengers. But I assure you that we will provide whatever vehicles that we have available. In addition, our partners within the region in Maryland and Northern Virginia will also provide services coming to the inauguration. We're working with them, and in the near future, we will have a pamphlet that we can issue explaining all the services that will be available in this region. To help us offset the costs on the rail system for this labor-intensive service, I am providing a resolution that will allow me to charge peak fares on that 17-hour period on inaugural day. The reason for this is, again, because of the enormous cost of providing services and the demand that we will have for our services, which warrants a peak fare. The peak fares are not likely to cover all of our costs of providing the services, and we do have plans to ask the federal government for reimbursement for services that are not covered for fares on that day for the festivities. As part of the resolution, we're also asking the board to allow us or me to charge for parking for that day or give me that authority to do so. And one of the reasons is that we will have attendants at the parking facilities to assist with the parking of charter buses as well as cars from our customers. And that will be an expense that we currently do not incur. To make it easier for our customers, we will be able to accept cash upon entry. Having said that, I want to reemphasize the point. This will be the greatest demand on this system in its entire history. This will be a demand on this region that we have not seen before. Based upon the estimates that are coming in regarding the number of people who will attend the inauguration, you can expect long crowds, a long wait. You will not be able to exit the system immediately. It will take some time. And after the parade itself, I'm asking that people who are using a public transit system go to find a nice place to eat, visit one of the museums in the District of Columbia, or take some other activities, because it will take us several hours to move the people off of the mall back to their points that they boarded the system. Mr. Chairman, that's my report on the two major events that are coming up in January. As we normally do, we also like to do an employee spotlight, and I'm asking Mr. Francis if he could handle that. And after that spotlight, we will discuss the resolution that's necessary and ask you for the voice vote to allow me to distribute additional smart trip cards.
Thank you. I'd like to ask, check operator Glendora Williams. Ms. Williams, if you come down to join Mr. Zimmer and Mr. Cato. On May 31st, as train operator Williams was pulling into the Mount Vernon Square Metrorail station, she noticed a man laying on the track bed. She immediately jumped into the action by stopping the train and averting the tragedy. She then notified the Operation Control Center, who shut down the power to the third rail. This allowed a Metrorail supervisor and Metrorail Transit police officer to revive the semi-conscious man and remove him safely from the track bed. Quick response by Operator Williams certainly saved this man's life. And for that reason, Operator Glendora Williams is our Employee Spotlight recipient. Please join me in acknowledging Operator Williams.
And thank you, Mr. Cato.
Mr. Chair, there are a couple of items that actions I'm going to ask the board to take. But when I made my presentation, and I was looking at my notes, I noticed I did not mention that we do have some restrictions on what we're going to be able to do that day.
On Inauguration Day, you're speaking.
Excuse me?
You're speaking about Inauguration Day.
Yes. On Inauguration Day, we are still under the restrictions, the charter restrictions from the Federal Transit Administration that prohibits us from providing charter services unless we have contacted private operators. I believe there's no private operators available. We're still in communications with the Federal Transit Administration to attempt to get a waiver on that issue.
This is an important point, Ms. Cato. We already heard from many people concerning the changes that affected Redskin game days, again, because of a new regulation the Federal Transit Administration is promulgating, I guess, pursuant to congressional action, that limits our ability to do that. I think, as I've said, that was basically to help out a particular industry. and it has caused difficulties for many of our passengers. Now we find a complication on a day in which it's unlikely there are any free charter services available. I'm sure everybody's booked. But there are a lot of things that you would be doing that we're not capable of doing because of this administrative situation. And my understanding, Mr. Cato, is that you've requested the waiver and basically have not been able to receive that.
As of today, we do not have the waiver. I will continue to communicate and work with the FTA staff to attempt to do so.
Well, and perhaps others will communicate as well. It seems kind of odd that the federal government would be in a situation like this getting in the way of the ability of a local agency to help provide service to a federal activity, namely the inauguration of the president.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Lynn.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment on this in light of the fact that, many of you know that I was the FTA administrator, and we did have a provision that did allow us to waive the charter rules or regs for an event like this. We have a way of determining what the demands are on the charter bus industry. I would suspect that all the charter bus industries are going to be tapped out pretty well with this event. Previously, the FTA administrator did have the ability to waive that provision to allow the public agencies to, in fact, provide service. In light of the fact that we are going to be constrained, our general manager has already said very clearly that our rail system will not be able to meet the demand that's going to be placed upon it. And the fact that we now, because of this regulation or the inability of the FTA to waive those provisions, puts more pressure on our system because we can't supplement the rail with the charter service, or not charter service, but with the freely provided bus services that we could have, not just for our own buses, but buses that could be provided to us from other agencies that could loan buses to us to supplement our own fleet. So that is a restriction that I would hope those who are in higher positions would examine that and see if we can get some relief.
Thanks, Mr. Lynn.
Mr. Chair, there's two actions I'm requesting of the board. One is by voice vote to authorize me to provide additional smart trip cards to social service agencies as needed.
How many, what's the authorization you're asking for?
Up to 50,000.
50,000 additional?
Yes.
And in terms of the budget, this is coming from?
The marketing budget.
That's correct. It will be coming from our marketing budget, and we have room in our current budget this year to accommodate for that request.
Discussion. Mr. Albert.
Mr. Cato, can you tell us how are you determining which organizations are going to receive the additional cards?
Actually, it would be the representatives. We have one representative for each of the compact jurisdictions. The social, it's really an element, an agency that's with the District of Columbia. Or with a county or a city. We will distribute them to that agency, and they will distribute them to other social service agencies.
So, for example, in the District of Columbia, have you determined what that agency is?
Yes. Sir, do you know the name of the agency in the District of Columbia?
Jorge Navarro, who's our head of community relations. The name of the agency within the District of Columbia that we're distributing social cards to.
We have the person's name here, but.
Well, we have various agencies that form part of a coalition of housing and homeless organization, and they include from the N Street Village to many others.
Health and Human Services was the.
Oh, who is doing the actual distribution? Yeah. Yes, the Department of Human Services.
So let me just ask a follow up, Mr. Chair. How are you ensuring equitable distribution? There are a number of social services agencies that I'm sure would want to use that facility. How are you ensuring that it's equitably distributed?
We had this discussion back in back when we were tasked with the responsibility for distributing the original 50,000. And the thought was that because the demands, the requirements in the district may be different from the requirements in Prince George's, from Montgomery to Fairfax, that we would leave that that flexibility to the individual social service agencies in each of those jurisdictions. And so our message to them was, here are the cards, this is what the intent is here, and to develop your own criteria. I know we had some discussion, there were some agencies that developed criteria and shared it with other agencies, and so basically it was left to the individual jurisdictions to empower themselves to develop what would be appropriate in their own jurisdictions.
Mr. Kidd, you need a motion to authorize that distribution of an, up to an additional 50,000 smart trip cards?
Yes, sir.
Mr. McKinney.
Why don't we require those agencies that are receiving the cards to distribute them by a certain date? I mean, I'm certainly okay with 50,000 more. I think there's a need for that. But when you look at the chart, we haven't distributed the 50,000 to individuals that are already out there. So why not require them to do that by a certain date before issuing more?
I'm sure we could do that.
I think it would be advisable. I mean, it seems to me like there's a disconnect between us giving them social service agencies and the urgency those agencies have in distributing them. And I don't know why they haven't been distributed to the individuals in a more expeditious manner, but I would think before we authorize more,
it's a good question. As I said, as far as I know, in my own jurisdiction, I believe they have been. But one of the questions is whether they're holding them back because of the timing. I mean, maybe, I don't know about this, but maybe it doesn't make sense to give them all out before January 4th, and they may be holding them for the time when they think it will be most appropriate to do. I mean, that makes sense, actually, or could make sense anyway. But the thing is, we really don't have very much information about exactly what's happening after we distribute these, which I think is some of the concern that Mr. Graham was raising earlier. We need to at least hear something back about how this is proceeding, because we don't even have a very good sense after all this time about how well it's working, Mr. Graham.
Have you established agreements with each of these agencies, you know, memorializing the understanding of what they ought to do and so on? Has that been reduced to writing and in any way?
We have had, we do not have a memorandum of understanding in that kind of formality. We have we have letters that we sent when we originally sent these out so people would understand what the purpose was. We've had monthly conversations to update our numbers here. We've had, we sent about 200 letters out only a few weeks ago, reaching out not only to those jurisdictional agencies, but also to the deeper agencies that we were getting inquiries from. We had several information sessions with social service agencies individually to talk about what was going to be happening here. But as far as a formal memorandum of understanding, no, we have not had that.
See, I mean, I think the point I'm trying to make, and if this is off base, you'll let me know, but is that these agencies, I'm going to guess, really don't see this as something other than just something that's being handed to them by a Metro WMATA. Now, we would assume that, oh, yes, they would respond with alacrity and enthusiasm and, yeah, we're going to get these cards out and we're putting aside all of our other work. I'm uneasy about this, Mr. Cato. I'm uneasy about this, speaking only for the District of Columbia, about just what kind of priority this is in terms of monitoring and distribution and commitment within the Department of Human Services in the District of Columbia. And I just, and I think for us to say, well, we've sent 19,000 cards to DHS, it just falls short of the type of assurance that I'm seeking. And I previously made these comments, not just at this meeting, but throughout this whole process. And maybe Deputy Mayor Albert and myself can get involved with this. I'm happy to do it from my role of oversight in the DC Council and find out just what's going on here. If you will utilize our services on this,
we will give you a report, and we would welcome that support.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. I have similar concerns, and part of it is I think as Mr. Graham's saying, we don't really know what's happening. And for instance, we're distributing these to certain agencies and certain types of agencies, and they may reach certain populations, and that may all be good. But we don't know the degree to which we're reaching everybody that the board intended to reach in the first place in doing this a year ago. Many people, for instance, many of the working poor aren't necessarily coming in contact with the social agencies to whom we are distributing these cards. So how are we helping that problem? And the board is frankly seeing nothing back other than the table we got today, which seems very incomplete. It will really give us an idea of what's happening, and that continues to be a concern for me. Mr. Yule.
I was just going to comment that certainly we all seem to be frustrated in terms of why this hasn't worked as efficiently and effectively as can be, but I believe in teamwork, and I think the thing which Mr. Graham offered up is for a select number of members of this board to work with the appropriate staff to, you know, really implement, design and implement something that, a process, a system that we can all be satisfied with.
I think I just, I can just support Mr. Yule's comment. We're a transit agency, and I don't think we can tread in areas where we don't have expertise. There's always this issue of local control. There's always this issue of making sure that those who have both responsibility and knowledge are tied in to do what they're both designed and paid to do. There's social service structures that in all our counties that know more or should know more about who's in need. That is their charge. And we try to work with them. I mean, I'm concerned in Montgomery County that, in fact, there are cards that have been distributed that have not been given to those agencies. I want to talk to the county exec and find out why, in fact, an agency that's in our jurisdiction has not done that and what the problem is. And I would expect that agency, who distributes other type of social services, to have some understanding of demand and needs within that jurisdiction. I would not expect our staff to have both the outreach, the ability, and the relationships to be able to assess that and to distribute that. So, you know, that's just my view of that's how our structures were designed, and it seems to me that's the way they should function.
Ms. Kidd, I'd like to ask that this matter, and I'll support the action you request today, but I think that at the first meeting in January, I believe we have a customer service meeting on the 8th, is it? We should get a report on exactly what's happened, both with what we've authorized so far, with whatever you'll have done, with what the action we're taking today, assuming the board approves it, that gives us a clear picture of what's happening, what we know, and who are reaching, where we're reaching, all these things, so that the board has a much clearer idea of exactly how this is being implemented.
Yes.
Will you do that?
Yes, sir.
Assuming the concurrence of the board, and we'll have that added to the agenda for January 8th. And I will move authorization of the request the manager made for authority to issue up to an additional 50,000 Smart Trip cards according to the same plan as before, and from the budget source that was indicated. Seconded by Mr. Graham. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. All right, and you have a resolution before us that authorizes the actions you described with regard to Inauguration Day weekend service levels, fares, and passes. This is a blue sheet that says revised on the top. That's the most up-to-date version. I will move its approval. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Albert. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. All right. And that concludes your report, Mr. Cahill.
Yes, sir, that completes.
All right. And then we will move on to committee business. The first one being the report of the Committee on Customer Service Operations and Safety. Mr. Graham.
Thank you. This is the report from our meeting on December the 4th, 2008. We did have an action item on the discontinuation of Route N-22, but on behalf of myself and Mr. Albert, we would like to recommit this matter to the committee. Do I need a motion on that?
Well, I'll take that as a... You're moving that the board send this item on Route N-22 back to committee.
That's correct.
For further deliberation.
That's correct.
There's a second to the motion. Seconded by Mr. Albert. Discussion. It's a district matter, so it seems appropriate to me to honor that request. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
Now, we discussed a number of information items. We had reports, as we always do, on operational performance. We had a lot of discussion regarding the elevator, escalator outages and Metro's maintenance approach. And staff will provide a report detailing the entire process of how Metro manages the escalator elevator program at our February customer service committee meeting. The operations plan for January 17th to the 20th will be provided as soon as it is finalized. On Metro, on crime statistics relating to Metro, staff provided the monthly crime statistics showing part one, the most serious crimes from 2003 to 2008. We had good solid safety performance indicators, and of course we heard about Metro's new website. That concludes our report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Next is the report of the Finance Administration Oversight Committee, Mr. Benjamin.
You have before you a package on the 7000 series rail car procurement. That's what the 7K means. In this one, we have already approved advertising for the initiation and advertising for 64 rail cars for Dulles as phase one. What this does is add $0 and subject to prioritization, capital prioritization process, and the availability of funds and additional board approvals, adding options for another 64 rail cars for Dulles and 620 additional rail cars for Metro, for the regular Metro system. And that would give us a grand total of 684 additional rail cars that are being added as options. I move approval.
Motion by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Ms. Hudgens. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
Second item before you is for the Roslyn Station Access Improvements Project. It's an action for $1,194,000, broken into two parts. $884,000 is available at the present time, coming entirely from Arlington County. We're also amending the budget in advance for an additional $310,000 should Arlington County decide to provide that for additional work at Roslyn Station. The entire funding of this project is a Arlington County set of funding. This authorizes the general manager to move ahead with these projects. It amends the budget and authorizes the general manager to amend the agreement between Metro and Arlington County. I move approval.
Mr. Benjamin moves approval. I'll second it. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Mr. Benjamin.
That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Next is the report of the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee, Mrs. Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Planning and Development and Real Estate Committee.
Motion by Mrs. Hudgens and seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Ms. Hudgens.
And that is no.
Thank you. All right. We have a number of administrative actions, a couple of which will need to be taken separately. Mr. Benjamin.
I move all of the administrative actions with the exception of items 2 and 12.
Motion is to approve en bloc the recommendations under administrative actions 1 through 12 minus 2 and 12. So that's actually 1 and 3 through 11. It's seconded by Ms. Hewlett. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Those items are approved. Now we'll take up item number 2, which is the request for board approval to initiate and award a new sole source contract for providing PROTECT, that's an acronym, at one additional Metrorail station for an amount not to exceed $606,000. Mr. Benjamin.
One of the areas in which these actions that come before us have improved enormously is by the inclusion of a table in each one of them that shows which budget is being impacted, how that budget is being impacted, and what the specific action is relative to that budget. I was struck with the fact that does not appear to be the case for this action, so I was wondering if we could at least know which budget is this included in and how is this being impacted.
Answer.
Mr. Benjamin, this will be done by our engineering and major capital projects department as a result of the receipt of a 100% grant from DHS, and the work will be done to add one station to our system.
Is it already budgeted? Have we ever approved a budget that includes this action?
Mr. Couch has a little bit more information on this.
This is part of the safety and security line items. It was not specifically budgeted on an annual basis. As we've received grants from Homeland Security, we've gone forward with projects of this nature.
If I remember correctly, one of the points that I've heard many times from Ms. Kissel and her staff is that it's really, really hard to track things when they aren't in a budget and when they aren't specifically in a budget. And the policy of this board has been that items that you're going to spend money on need to be in a budget. What I'm hearing is there is no action that has actually put this $600,000 into a budget. It's just sort of off there by itself. And I'd request that you come back to the board with a request that this be put into a very specific budget and then spent from this very specific budget. And we normally do that with a resolution.
Or we do that.
What's your pleasure?
No action until they come back with a budget action.
Okay, so the board will pass this item.
Yes, item 12, I'm sorry. Yes, we will return back on item 2.
The dollar for Prince George's County plus the 25 cents differential still adds up to the $1.25 of the Metro bus fare.
Ms. Hewlett, is what you just said that this action is necessary so that passengers there are paying the same rate everybody else is paying everywhere else?
And not in excess, which is what the problem that they're having right now.
And you have a motion? There's a resolution here.
In front of us, and I move approval of the resolution as drafted.
Motion to approve by Ms. Hewlett. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Benjamin.
What is this?
It's the resolution here attached to the backside of item, the revised item. There's now a motion. It's before the board for consideration. Discussion.
Well, I'm just trying
Mr. Graham.
to.
Mr.
Can I just have one more explanation of this?
Sure.
So that what we're doing is that for the bus passengers who have paid $1, there will be no step-up charge?
No, there will be a step-up charge, but the step-up charge is now reduced.
Oh, I see.
Because it was 50 cents, which would have taken it to $1.50 in accordance with the 2004 resolution. So now they're reducing the 50 cent step-up charge to 25 cents.
And this has impact only on the bus?
Correct.
It
may have other, as other jurisdictions raise their fare, it may or may not be an issue, but we'll address that if and when the time comes.
Thank you.
Ms. Benjamin.
I would note in listening to that discussion that we did, in fact, update all of our fares in 2007 to be implemented in 2008. And at that time, the tariff was adjusted, yet this action is going back to a tariff adjustment that we did in 2004. I think it would be very useful if, first of all, when we do our updates and fares, we do, in fact, cover all of these issues and make sure that all those tariff adjustments occur. And I think also that we should have a single policy for step-up fares, if that is appropriate, so that we aren't having one policy for Prince George's and another policy for Montgomery and a third policy for Fairfax. So I would hope that, although we need to make this fix at this present time, when we approach any new fare increase, that we actually try to establish a single policy that is reflective of the need of local jurisdictions to change the fares for their bus systems and doesn't then require a change that is passed by this board.
For the future.
Further discussion? Question is on the motion to approve the resolution as it appears on the item with the bold revised on the top of the front page. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. That concludes administrative items.
Did we do that full administrative?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. Okay. We have jurisdictional reports. District of Columbia, Mr. Graham.
No report.
Maryland, Mr. Linton.
No report.
Virginia, Mrs. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a report from NBTC, but I wondered, we had a discussion in our committee meeting regarding the item that we did in discussing its finances and the effect of a stimulus package. And I would hope that we would come back to this board as soon as possible with some list of, I think we've already provided some list of projects for the stimulus package, but that we have some details on that at our next meeting.
I'd ask Mr. Cato that, to the extent that these lists are revised and this is ongoing discussion, that you provide to the board as soon as it's available any such information, and then of course it can be discussed at an upcoming meeting.
Produce so, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. We are still under the motion previously adopted for closed session is still in effect. We will go upstairs to conclude the remaining items. We may have an item to come back to approve an open session prior to our adjournment. With that, we're now going to recess to executive session.